Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome in to Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe here with you. Nick Kieser, the reporter on the ones and twos. Michelle Knezovic with the day off. She'll return on Monday. Looking forward to that. Willie Donnett going to join me in the 10 o'clock hour. And I think I'm going to stick around with them. A little Chase Willie D-Mace reunion, day number two. So we will do that. Sean Henry, Predators president and CEO, going to join us in about 15 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on last night's win against the New Jersey Devils. Predators have won three straight as they head into the All-Star break, as they have picked up a little bit of momentum going into that, which I think is definitely a good thing. The way that they've played the last two games specifically, if they can do that night in and night out, then I think this team can do some things. Nick, what's going on? How we doing?
Doing good, Chase. It was a pretty good win last night.
Well, they're all good. Any wins are good.
Well, yes, but I mean, given the fact that they played a New Jersey Devils team that was that good, that only lost two games on the road coming in, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was a gutsy win. That's for sure. I give you a hard time, but it's very, very true. The effort was certainly there, and I mean, people were asking me my thoughts going into that game, and I said, I honestly don't know. I mean, I kind of lean towards New Jersey's probably going to win this one. They're a better team. They're one of the best teams in hockey right now. I mean, you look at the standings, they're second in their division, only 2 points back of the Carolina Hurricanes. But in their record overall, 31-13-4. They have had a really, really good start to their season. They are young. They are talented. They have good goaltending. And the Predators, quite frankly, had been very up and down. I mean, that's – you ask anybody about their season – and that's the phrase they use to describe what the Predators have been this year, up and down. And it's three games, it's three wins in a row since this meeting that they had. And there's a lot on that meeting that we'll discuss. But you got to keep doing it. Now, like I said, if you continue to have the same effort that you had, especially against Winnipeg and especially against New Jersey, then I believe good things are going to happen. But you got to show me that you can do that night in and night out. And, oh, by the way, you're about to have an 11-day break, or a 10-day break, I guess, is what it is, until your next game. And so, sometimes you build a little momentum and it wears off, and that makes me a little bit nervous. But I love what I saw last night. Yes, it was high scoring, but you know that when – the Predators are clicking. They have that ability. New Jersey already has a lot of scoring power, and therefore that's what we saw last night. But, you know, the fact that you're getting Cody Glass continuing to play well, his seventh of the season. I mean, Tommy Novak, Juuso Parsonen, and two young guys three young guys that contributing there. Cole Smith with his second goal of the season. All rejoice. Once again, Parsonen on that play, Colton Sissons, Mikael Granlund breaking through with Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, and Tanner Jeannot with one for good measure to close it out. That's what you want to see. And I especially saw a determined Matt Duchene last night. I saw the Matt Duchene really the last handful of games that I saw last year. I mean, you see that effort, you see that determination. You know, we talked to him a few weeks ago, and I asked him how he thought his season was going, and he said, the numbers weren't showing the way that he wanted to. And I agree. I mean, I think we'd all agree with that. He had been doing some good things, but it wasn't consistent. How do you get that consistency out of him? And I think you saw that last night and then against Winnipeg. Matt Duchene was asked about that team meeting and some of the things that came out of it, and now I think we're seeing the results.
Sometimes you don't know what's going on, and it's hard to everyone's kind of got their own version of maybe what's wrong, and I think we just got to the point of some things that we're the hair off with, and that St. Louis game looks like a blessing in disguise now, because we were tired, we weren't feeling it mentally, and came out laid an egg, and it kind of brought some things to the surface that probably had gone unnoticed, and we had won some games that maybe we shouldn't have. So it was good. It's been a turning point for us so far, but three games isn't, the rest of the season.
Here's the thing about teams, and I remember the teams from a few years ago that made that run to the Cup final. Thing about that team was they played for the guy next to them. They didn't play for themselves. They played for the guy next to them. And you knew that night in and night out. That was a team. That was a group that was so close that, you know, if player A turned to player B, one night you might hear, "Hey, dude, awesome game tonight. Great effort. Love that." Or you might hear the same two go, "Dude, what are you doing? You can do better than that. I know you can do better than that. What was that tonight?" And that's a team. You got to be able to have those tough conversations. And I feel like that maybe based on some of the things that the players and the coaches and David Poile have said, you know, about this meeting, is that they hadn't been doing that. And it's all about accountability. And you got to hold each other accountable. I mean, it's like that in anything in life that you do, you know, with your friends or your family, that you got to be able to be close enough to someone, trust someone enough that you can look them in the eye and go, "Yo, what's up? I know that you're better than that." And I feel like that's what has happened with this Predators team. And we can all point to who needed to be, you know, quote unquote, called out. I don't think that that's any surprise. You know, there's two guys to me on that roster that 98% of the time I don't have to worry about. Their names are Juuse Saros and Roman Josi. And yeah, they're going to make mistakes. That's a part of it. That's a part of playing a game. But guess what? If you know they're putting the effort in night out, you get a pass if you make a mistake. But then there's, you know, guys that are dependent on to be really, really good night in and night out, and they quite frankly just haven't been. And you know who they are. Forsberg, Duchesne, Granlund, Johansson. Those are guys that I expect to do more on a consistent basis than they do sometimes. Not just this show up for a game or two and then it falls off, and then, you know, show up for a game or two and then it falls off. They got to be consistent. And again, you're going to have mistakes. That happens. And then there's Ryan McDonagh, who I actually think has been playing pretty well since he came back from the injury. You know, he's one of those guys that I think has kind of become, you know, a reliable go-to member of that team and a member of the leadership team as well. So I think that it's important, you know, if you're going to be a really, really good team and a cohesive team, that you can have those honest conversations with each other and you can look your teammate in the eye, Matthias Ekholm's another one, and say, "Hey, you got to get your head out of your you-know-what and you got to play better." And I feel like that's what's happened, you know, that these guys, you know, rallied together and became more of a team again than maybe they have been. The individuals make up the team. I understand that. But you all got to be on the same page. And something that Matthias Ekholm brought up when he was on the show the other day was, I said, "Look, you know, you're out shooting teams. You're getting a bunch of shots on net." Again, this was against the Jets. And he made the point to say, not only are we getting the shots on net, but they're quality shots as well.
I think not just only the way we outshot them, I think the quality of shots as well. I thought we had some really good looks. I think, I mean, we had breakaways. Cody had some breakaways. I think Duchesne was in on a couple of two-on-ones, and we had some really quality looks, and I thought maybe the game should, at least, I mean, late in the third, it gets tight because they push, but, I mean, for the first 15 minutes of the third, I thought it was just us, and we could have scored easily a couple more goals. So sometimes shots is a good, I guess, parameter to look at, but, again, you got to look at the quality shots, too, and I thought we had some really good looks, and created some really good things in their end. And I was really happy with our effort last night.
That's Matthias Ekholm from Wednesday and talking about those shots. And Nick, look, you're the analytics guy, and I'm more of a, I see it with my own two eyes, and that's kind of how I roll. But you look at those numbers and those deep stats and, you know, quality chances and everything. What have you seen really specifically in the last two games that make you feel like that there's good things to come?
Well, Chase, I think the first thing that stands out to me is they heavily outshot the Devils in that game last night. And I think not just in that game last night, but they also outplayed the Winnipeg Jets too. I think those two games out of the last three have been the bigger ones to me, watching that team come together more cohesively. And you can see that even aside from just the numbers. But also, one thing that fans aren't talking enough about lately is they've given UC Saros a break somewhat. I really think that they have, because if you take a look at how much pressure he had on himself maybe the last two or three weeks, he's a guy that, yeah, he's relied on. He's going to steal games, and he has stolen very many so far this year. And I think one other number that really stands out to me, and I didn't really know what his record was against the Devils until I looked right before puck drop last night, but Saros had not lost a game in regulation against the Devils in his career.
I didn't know that either.
And now he is 7-0-1 and has a 2.19 goals against average against the Devils all time. And I think, too, I was listening to the postgame show last night, too, Chase, and I heard Kevin Lankinen in talking to Jay Moore and Max, and you know, he ended up telling them something along the lines of, just to paraphrase, that, you know, all these meetings that they've had lately have really been big for them, and it's really called out some guys like we've already been talking about. I mean, it's very apparent. I mean, look at Duchesne. He scored twice. He scored again last night. That's stuff that you need to have happen. And now we have an all-star break, 11 days off before the next game against the Vegas Golden Knights. And that's a team where, remember, last time we played the Golden Knights, Chase, who had a hat trick?
It was Forsberg.
Yeah, he had that crazy last-second goal to put him in overtime. And, you know, I really think that's another guy we need to see more out of here in the next
week or
so.
There's no question.
And if we don't see enough from him, that just puts more workload on a guy like Johansson and Granlund and Duchesne. And you can put that on one guy out of the guys that I listed. I think Duchesne is the guy that's going to score more goals than Forsberg this year. I think he probably will. If he keeps this pace up, I would love to see that happen. I think he's more than capable.
Yeah, but I want to see, like we saw last year, and those two just go back and forth and challenge each other.
That would be awesome.
I mean, right now, Forsberg's at 19, Duchesne's at 14. You know, I would hope that they can both get on runs and go back and forth. That's what they need. And then you get the secondary scoring from guys like Nino Niederreiter. Ryan Johansson can chip in every now and then. Now you want Johansson to be more of a distributor and set up the play. Same with Mikael Granlund. You know, I really like how Cody Glass has played. He scores the power play goal last night. That was encouraging. It's a total team effort. But, you know, when you talk about calling guys out, sometimes that's what you have to do. And it's not fun. It's not easy. But it's a part of it. And I think Matt Duchesne is professional enough and has been doing this long enough that, you know, and he strikes me as the kind of player that sometimes he just needs it. It's like, stop worrying about other things. Focus on this. And therefore, you have seen what that focus will do. So the Predators get the win last night. We'll talk more about the last night and what's to come with Willie Donick when he comes in studio at 10 o'clock. But coming up next, the president and CEO, Sean Henry, will join the show. As you listen to Chase and Michelle, no Michelle today. We're broadcasting live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. And our show is presented by Hair Club. Love your hair, live your life, creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women. Back here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe here with you today. Nick Kieser on the ones and twos. Michelle with the day off. Predators win it 6-4 over the New Jersey Devils last night at Bridgestone Arena. Fun atmosphere in that one. And let's say hello to the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators. Sean Henry is on the line with us. And Sean, we get to talk about a big dub last night. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's always more fun to talk about a W. I mean, last week we followed the Blues game, and I think this call is going to be a lot better than last week.
I do, too. Really love the effort. You know, one, it was a fun hockey game. I mean, yeah, it's a lot of goals, and if you're a goalie, you don't like that. But, you know, a lot of back and forth. You know, Jersey would score, Predators would score, Predators would score, Jersey would score. There was a lot of, you know, just going back and forth. And from a fan's point of view and the fans that were at Bridgestone Arena last night, they were entertained, and I know you were as well.
Well, it's funny. You know, the last two nights, or two games were just great games. And not just because we won. Obviously, they're better because we won. But as you said, as a fan, and never forget, the biggest fans in the building are on our bench. You know, they love hockey. And you talk to a couple of guys after the game, and both those games were just fun, good games to watch. I had a gentleman see me in the second intermission, and he was complaining that we were tied 1-1. I said, well, are you enjoying the game? And he said, no, I only enjoy them when I win. I said, well, I'm with you. I like winning a lot more. I said, but reflect back on the game for a minute. You're watching a great hockey game. And then I guaranteed him we won, and fortunately we did, and then I didn't see him after the game. But yeah, last night felt like a playoff game. The environment, the crowd was great. You know, for a Thursday night, cold day, you know, playing a non-division opponent, it's still, the fans were revved up, and then our guys gave them a lot to cheer for.
Well, and look, there's a lot of connections between both of these teams. Obviously, John Hines used to coach for the Devils. Tom Fitzgerald, the first captain of the Nashville Predators, is their GM. Andrew Brunette's on the coaching staff. He scored the first goal in Predators history. So you had a little bit of a connection happening last night between these two teams at Bridgestone Arena, and that just adds to it, you know, when you look at some of the history.
It really does. You know, I think last night we had four original Preds in the building, between Jay Moore and Bortolo's in the building, three gentlemen you mentioned too. So, yeah, it's always good when you have your original roster showing up and leaving their footprints and shadow on our game that we all love. And it's good to see those guys doing so well in our league.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the other part of all this in this conversation is, you know, the players have brought it up. David Poile's been on our air, and John Hines has been on our air, and they've all referenced that this meeting that everybody had. And I think, as you know, whether it's on a hockey team or in a board meeting or whatever, everybody's a part of this. Everybody's a part of the team. You got to hold everybody accountable. That's what makes a team a team. And I feel like that these guys have done that, and you have seen the results of that accountability, especially in the last two games.
Well, I think no matter what organization you talk about, you know, whatever industry, whether it's, again, in the locker room or meeting rooms or boardroom, as you pointed out, you know, when you have a group of people that buy into each other and can support each other and push each other forward, and then also offer, you know, some candid criticism, and it's received well because there's a trust factor that's there, well, that organization is going to have some success. And the more you do it, the more success there is, and the more fun it is too. And, you know, fun is good. And an organization that trusts each other and knows they can say, you know, good things to each other and pick each other up, push them forward, we'll have a little bit more fun, a little bit more success, and, you know, that wheel starts going. You know, inertia is a powerful thing. It's hard to stop.
I think you're describing our relationship, too. We push each other. That's what we do.
But, you know, it's funny. Like, yeah, you and I, we call each other all the time. Sometimes you joke around with some of the commercials you do and the good look it provides our team. Sometimes to say, what in the heck did that guy just say on the radio? And then conversely, you'll call me and say, hey, you know what? We're not getting what we need. But that's a good relationship, and it's healthy. And I always laugh when people scratch their heads and like, well, how was that meeting? Are the guys okay that they were, quote-unquote, held accountable? I don't even like that term. I hate throwing someone under the bus. Healthy, good relationships are candid, and they're timely, and they're not uncomfortable because you trust the person in what they're saying and why they're saying it. So that's why I do value our relationship.
Absolutely. We're talking to Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators. So we talked, I believe it was last week, about P.K. Subban. He was honored in Montreal. You all are going to do that now on February 13th when he is going to come back here. And it's not just P.K. is going to walk out on the ice and wave at the fans and everybody's going to cheer. I mean, he did so much off the ice that we're going to honor as well. The Blue Line Buddies program, that he's going to have a reunion of that. I know he's going to get to speak to all of us, but how cool is it going to be to have 76 back in the house?
You know, whenever we get a chance to bring back someone that had an impact on the team and the city, it's just always fun. And, you know, we really started this probably 4 or 5 years ago as, you know, we have more and more prominent alumni retiring and they can spend some time with us. You know, our fans love it. You know, we all have different memories of different players and, you know, the impact, you know, that they've had on our lives. But PK is truly special. You know, on the ice, he was, you know, just a tremendous player. You know, our best years were with him in a gold jersey. But what he did in the community is even more special. And, you know, I hate emphasizing one too much over the other. because his career was incredible and what he did off the ice is incredible. But I just go back to the day when there was so much civil unrest and there were so many people, you know, clamoring, you know, throwing their arms up. There's nothing we can do, or we need to do everything. In such a thoughtful way, PK said, I want to build bridges between, you know, some disenfranchised neighborhoods and kids and the police. And, you know, have them come out to a game, you know, have them eat dinner together, have them watch the game. You know, I want to meet with them. And we all just sat at him and realized he wasn't just talking about a problem. If we want to bring people together, we have to get them together. And, you know, sports can do great things in building bonds. And, you know, when you have a chance to eat with someone, you normally, you know, like them a little bit more. And then when you maybe seen the first game in your life, you start trusting that person. And the best part about it, he started this, I don't even know, 4 years ago or so, is the bonds that those police officers have with those kids still. And when he comes back next week or in 2 weeks, we're going to bring as many of those kids and officers back together again to show them how much we appreciate what they're doing. And the best way to change a life is one person at a time. And PK has done that time and time and time again.
Yeah, and the cool part, and you alluded to this, that it wasn't, hey, PK, you should do this. It was PK going, hey, I want to do this. And he didn't have to. I mean, he didn't have to take that on if he didn't want to, but he wanted to. And that is what I think what made it so impactful.
It really did. And, you know, I really just assumed teams throughout every league were going to copy this program. He was so thoughtful. He sent a letter to every team in professional sports outlining what we're doing and why we're doing it. And, you know, hopefully that'll catch some magic. And, you know, now that he's retired, maybe we can put a little re-emphasis behind that because, you know, our game is great. But when we can use it to connect people, you know, for better outcomes, it's even better.
You mentioned that, you know, honoring, you know, alums and bringing guys back. You know, when you got here, the team was still, you know, relatively young. And so there wasn't as much of a history. A lot of the guys that are getting honored now are still playing. And I think it's cool that you all have done that because I remember sitting in that arena the second year that the team was in existence on a Tuesday night with my dad against the San Jose Sharks, and it was still very, very new. People were learning the game. There was a lot of, unsure. They were unsure of it, didn't understand it. And then to see it grow, and you've obviously been a part of the later years of really watching the growth, but is it fun for you as a guy that wasn't here at the very beginning to kind of go back and relive some of the history of the Nashville Predators?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, and I was fortunate to be in Tampa before here. And, you know, I got there 7 or 8 years after that franchise started, similar timeline to this one. And we got to enjoy the same thing. You started putting together an alumni group. And, you know, I look at the Buffaloes and Vancouver's and Philly. I think three teams that embrace their alumni better than anyone in sports. And we want to emulate that and continue to build and build and build. So when we're turning the corner on our 30th, 35th, 40th year, and at some point have our own Ring of Honor or Hall of Fame, whatever it may be, you're tying back to a connection that you had as a 10-year-old. You know, my favorite baseball player ever is Fred Stanley. You don't even know who he is. He's a career, you know, 220 hitter, if I'm being generous, shortstop for the Yankees. For me, he was great. Every time you had a chance to, you know, see him, if he came back for an old-timers day or was the GM for the Oakland A's, it meant a lot to me. And every one of our alumni has that same 11-year-old that's now 55 years old or 40 years old or whatever. So it's nice to reconnect it. And I just love seeing it. I like seeing the guys embrace it and enjoy it and then talk about Nashville, how Nashville's grown and changed and evolved. And they normally spend some time at one of the Ford Ice Centers, if not both of them. And it's just fun watching their love for our city and our fans kind of come full circle.
Sean, I'm excited about February 8th, Nash Vegas at Bridgestone Arena. We're going to move Smashville Live to the arena that day. And so it'll be kind of a pregame show for the Nash Vegas event. It's my favorite event that you all do. I have always loved this event. Maybe because I like going to Vegas and you know, playing the tables every now and then, but it's cool to interact with the players and the coaches and everybody. And it's just, obviously for a good cause to raise some money, but I'm excited about February 8th in Nash Vegas.
You know, I love the event. We all do. You know, we used to do a little bit more of a stuffier event. It was a sit down dinner one player was at a table of strangers, and that's all we got to do and see. And I just love.
Uh-oh. I think we lost you, Sean.
Players.
There we go.
Oh, man. Are you back?
Yeah, you cut out a little bit.
Oh, man. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I made a great point, too. I was talking about, you know, you and, you know, the great time you have at the tables. But it really is a fun event, and our foundation does a great job engaging with our fans.
No doubt about it. Sean, appreciate it as always. Enjoy the All-Star break, even though I know it's probably not much of a break for you. But we will talk to you next week.
All right, man. Thank you so much, Chase, and look forward to seeing you after an awful break. I hate this break because we're without hockey for what seems like 2 months.
I know.
But can't wait to see everyone again.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Thanks, Sean.
Talk to you soon.
Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, joins us every Friday at 9:15 here on the show to talk about different things going on in the organization and beyond, and appreciate that. Coming up next, I could not resist bringing this up on the show because yesterday I was listening to Stillman and Company, and we all know Jared's infatuation with Tom Brady, especially getting Tom Brady in two-tone blue in Nashville, to the point that he laid out a plan, an 8-point plan, to bring Tom Brady to Nashville. I will give my thoughts on this plan, and we want yours as well. Coming up next, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You can weigh in on the phone and text line, 615-737-1025. It's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, especially with the response to what we're about to do. Chase and Michelle, Chase McCabe here with you, Nick Kieser, the reporter on the ones and twos, Michelle Knezvik with the day off, Willie Donick going to join us in about 30 minutes in studio. But yesterday, I'm listening to Stillman and Company, and Jared has an 8-point plan to bring Tom Brady to Nashville to be the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. Now, before we even do any of this, I'm going to just say that I believe there is no chance in hell that Tom Brady's actually going to be the quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. I'm saying that right now, and if I'm wrong, I will admit that I'm wrong. I don't see it happening. However, I thought that this plan was at times compelling, at times delusional, but I will let you be the judge. So we start with point number one. Jared Stillman's grand plan to bring Tom Brady to Nashville.
Tim Kelly becomes the offensive coordinator. Tim Kelly knows the Brady Patriots scheme because that's what they ran with Bill O'Brien and the Texans. I'd much rather have Bill O'Brien, but he's with the Patriots, so I'm not going to get him. So I've got Tim Kelly, who knows the Patriots scheme and he knows the Titans scheme, and that's really important. Because there's certain language that is probably used by the Patriots that's not used in this system. And Tim Kelly is the one who's going to have to bridge the gap. He knows them both. It's almost like being able to speak both English and Spanish. He's fluent in them. He's the offensive coordinator. He knows both. And in reality, it's more so he's working with Brady than it is that he is working above Brady. But Tim Kelly becomes the offensive coordinator.
Okay, so that's point number one. I heard that and I go, all right. I mean, I kind of feel like that's probably where this is going anyway, even though if it – wouldn't he have done it already? I keep going back and forth on that, of why if that's going to be the ultimate result, why it hasn't happened at this point. But I thought he made an interesting observation that, you know, Tim Kelly worked with Bill O'Brien, obviously, was the offensive coordinator, so he knows that scheme. It can be a merger of the two schemes between what the Titans have kind of been running and what – Brady ran in New England. So I don't hate that. I don't think that that's completely out of the realm of craziness or possibility. But I don't know how much that's really going to entice Brady, because even though he has connections to a guy that he's worked with, they've never actually worked together. So I don't know if Brady would really care one way or another. That's kind of my view on that point. But, you know, I think of a lot of the things that you're going to hear, that may be the most realistic thing that actually does happen, because I think, you know, that's probably going to be the end result anyway. So here's point number two.
Mike Vrabel and Amy Adams Strunk have to go pay a trip to Mike Munchak, because Mike Munchak is in the team's Hall of Fame. Mike Munchak is one of the best offensive line coaches on the planet, and Mike Munchak has been fired by the organization as the head coach. And they need to offer him a boatload of money, and they need to offer him the offensive line coach position, and they need to make him assistant head coach or something that elevates him above the other coaches on the staff. They need to kiss the rings. They need to get down on their knees. They need to claim that Tommy Smith didn't know what he was doing. They've got to beg Mike Munchak to come back here because he's the best line coach that I know of that's available on the market. If they don't get Mike Munchak, and I don't think they will because word on the street is Munch lives out west and so do his daughters and he wants to stay out there, the backup plan would be Mike Devlin. Now, he's a friend of Vrabel, which I don't love, but he was the line coach for the Texans with Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly in Houston. So all those blocking schemes, again, the Patriot way, Mike Devlin knows. He's currently the assistant offensive line coach with the Ravens. Now the Ravens are having a staff overhaul. So I don't know what Mike Devlin's contract situation is. I think if you're the Titans, and I think they're waiting on Mike Devlin right now, I think if you're the Titans, your hope is that the Ravens end up firing him, and then you offset whatever you pay him. But that's semantics that nobody cares about.
Okay, so let me say this. I love Mike Munchak. I would do a backflip if Mike Vrabel announced that Mike Munchak was joining the team as the offensive line coach. It's not going to happen. I don't see that happening at all. I think the Devlin thing has more of a realistic shot. You know, I don't know. I think Munch is probably over, you know, everything. You know, it was Tommy Smith, as Jared alluded to, that was the one that fired him. It's a different regime now. You know, he said, he's in the Hall of Fame. He's honored by the team. I mean, he was with this organization for a long, long time as a player and a coach. So I don't know if that would really get in the way. I think the big thing is just where he's at in his life and his career. Now, I think I've read that, you know, could he go back to the Steelers, which is where he was when he left here? He and Coach Mike Tomlin have a really good relationship. If they could pull that off, then more power to him. I think that would be fantastic. But I don't see it. I don't see that even being realistic for him to come back here at this point in his life and his career. But I like the thought, because the key, even without Brady, is going to be fixing the offensive line and bringing in an offensive line coach similar to Mike Munchak that can develop these young offensive linemen. Because I think ultimately that might have been the issue with Keith Carter, is Keith Carter couldn't develop the young offensive linemen, and therefore he's gone and he's now with the New York Jets. So not trying to punch holes in everything, but I just don't think it's realistic. Let's get to point number three.
I offer Orlando Brown Jr. the contract that should have been given to A.J. Brown last year, the left tackle of the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, they've already used the franchise tag on him once. That's what he's playing on right now. I'm not sure they'll franchise tag him again and pay 120% of the tag. That's a lot of money. And it's not about cap or anything like that. It's just, that's a lot of money. And so if I'm the Titans, I should have a big contract to dole out that I did not give to A.J. Brown, that I told everybody I was willing to give to A.J. Brown. So that is the play. Orlando Brown Jr., here's a 5-year contract, probably $25 million a season. It is through the roof, and you are going to have to pay elite money. And he might be a little bit less than an elite left tackle. But again, I'm trying to get Tom Brady to come here, so I'm going to offer him a boatload of money to just shore up left tackle and not worry about either tackle spot, because I've got Petit Ferrer at right tackle, who I don't love but is serviceable. My backup is Kelvin Beachum of Arizona, who's a free agent. I could probably go get him for a whole lot less money. But again, a legitimate starting left tackle. Not as good as Brown, but I've got a left tackle, and you need a left tackle if you're going to go after Tom Brady.
Okay, agree with that. You do need a left tackle if you're going to go after Tom Brady. My only hesitation is paying $25 million for that left tackle that's going to be 27 years old. And I would rather go the draft route and develop a guy, you know, with that offensive line coach like we were talking about, than pay that kind of money for a left tackle. I understand you're going to have to start paying out, and they do to an extent, but you're going to have to pay out that kind of money for a playmaker or something like that. But I'm hesitant on $25 million for a left tackle. I like Orlando Brown. I mean, that's a good player for sure. But I don't know about $25 million. Nick, you're shaking your head like you agree with me.
I mean, there's no way I'd bring in a guy like that. I would rather trust the coaching staff.
27 years old.
Yeah, I'd rather trust the coaching staff to go get somebody. Because if you can develop someone, A, they're cheaper, and B, what if that guy becomes a stud? You know?
Yeah.
I know it's a what if, but I mean, that is something that we could very feasibly have happen as opposed to overpaying somebody.
Like, and I understand Jared's premise because you're kind of looking at everything as it's a one-year thing. That's what this is. And so I understand why he's saying go out and do that. But you also have to think, in my mind, beyond 1 year. That's why I'm against getting Tom Brady, because I don't like the putting all your eggs in one basket for 1 year and then what happens if you're out in the divisional round.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, it's the same result that you've had with Tannehill. And that would be where the fan base would go nuts, is like, we just got the same damn thing and we had the GOAT. So that's why I'm just hesitant to put $25 million towards a left tackle. All right, quickly, point number four.
I call the New England Patriots and I offer Robert Woods for Jonnu Smith. I know what you're thinking. You know, oh, Jonnu Smith makes all that money. Robert Woods is owed $13.75 million next year. Jonnu Smith's owed $10.8 million. So you actually would save some money. The truth is, regardless of if I have Tannehill as the quarterback or Brady as the quarterback, I need a tight end. I need a starting tight end in the NFL. Now, Jonnu Smith has stunk it up in New England. No way around it. They paid him all that money, and he hasn't done jack. But Jonnu Smith, just like Tim Kelly, knows both schemes. He knows the Patriots scheme. He knows the Titans scheme. I think that will help Brady. We all know that for whatever reason it is that the Patriots aren't using Jonnu Smith right, we know Jonnu Smith is better than he's been in New England. Now, I don't think Jonnu Smith's going to be the same player that he was before he got paid and now that he's a little bit older. But the one thing that I get out of Jonnu Smith is I get a guy who can play on both running and passing downs. The last 2 years, the Titans have run guys out on running downs like Jeff Swaim and Michael Pruitt, and then on passing downs, put in Austin Hooper and Anthony Firkser. No, no, no. I want two tight ends. I want Jonnu Smith. I want Chig Okonkwo, and I want them to play on running and passing downs. And so Jonnu Smith's going to have to take a little bit less money to play here, but I'll guarantee him a little bit of money next year in order to get him to do the deal, because he's got no guaranteed money next year. But I'm trading Robert Woods. New England needs receivers. You know they want to get out of the Jonnu deal, so I'm taking Jonnu Smith back.
New England's not going to do that deal. They're not. I it's good in thought. But one, I don't want Jonnu Smith back. I just – that ship has sailed. You know, Chig Okonkwo should be the starting tight end for this team moving forward. I'm fine bringing Austin Hooper back, even with Brady. You know, he could make Austin Hooper look better than maybe he is. Same with any tight end. And here's the other thing. If Brady were to come here, it is not out of the realm of possibility that Gronk doesn't come with him. I think that has more of a chance than people are giving it credit for, that Rob Gronkowski could come out of retirement again and play one more year with Brady. Because, one, he loves Nashville, so I could totally see that. But I'm going to say no. I agree Robert Woods probably needs to go, at least with that contract. But I'm going to say no on Jonnu Smith. We're reacting to Jared's 8-point plan to bring Tom Brady to Nashville. We'll get with the others. Coming up next here on Chase and Michelle, 105-106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 105-106.3 The Game. No Michelle today. She'll be back with us on Monday. Chase McCabe and Nick Kieser on the ones and twos. Continuing our discussion, Jared Stillman's plan to bring Tom Brady to Nashville to play for the Tennessee Titans. Some interesting points have been made so far, but let's get to point number five.
I find out who on the Bucks Tom Brady really likes. Who do you like that I can either sign in free agency or trade for? And the other part about the Buccaneers that if, again, we're going to get Tom Brady and I'm Mike Vrabel, I think Tampa Bay would have interest in Ryan Tannehill. Probably for about a third-round pick. That's the going rate for a veteran starting quarterback, is about a third-rounder. That's what I believe Kansas City got in exchange for Alex Smith. So either I get a pick in exchange for Tannehill, or I get a player Brady likes in exchange for Tannehill. Could be a guard like Shaq Mason. Could be somebody at Tampa Bay. This is kind of a Brady thing. And again, it's a collaboration.
Okay. That I'll bite on. And looking at their free agents, Lavonte David's supposed to be a free agent. Akeem Hicks, Julio, we know that's out. He's on there. The guard, Aaron Stinney, didn't he play here? I think he's on there. Kyle Rudolph. I mean, there's nobody that really blows me away that would be somebody that I think they would want to bring in. Logan Ryan. So I don't know about free agent wise, but if you were to make a trade, the thing is I got this vibe towards the end that I don't really think there were too many people he did like with the New England Patriots. Can they get Vita Vey? I mean, he's freaking awesome. And I said Patriots, I meant Buccaneers. But I think that you know, if you could find a trade somewhere for a lineman, which probably isn't going to happen, then maybe you do that. But again, how much does that really matter? You know, I think what Brady's going to care about is what is the overall plan to make this team a Super Bowl contender, which they are currently not, even if you add Tom Brady. Let's get to point number six, if he's ready. He's ready.
I tell Tom that I plan to use the 11th overall pick on one of the three wide receivers in the first round. Quentin Johnson, Jordan Addison, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Now, I've got my reservations about Smith-Njigba because of the hamstring, and I don't know if those two guys are going to be worthy of the 11th overall pick. But I tell Tom in the meeting, and he understands this, if somebody better is there, I got to take him. Like, I'm going to get you a receiver to go with Treylon Burks, but if I'm picking at 11 and the next J.J. Watt is sitting there with the pick, I got to take him. And Tom knows that. Tom gets it. But with the 11th pick, whether it's moving up, moving down, I'm targeting one of those three receivers.
Here's my favorite part of that whole thing is he's like first name basis with Tom. Tom knows that. You know, Tom gets it. That always cracks me up. I think Brady would sit in a meeting, if there ever is a meeting, and he would say, "Hey, Vrabes, I trust you. Just go get the best player you can get." I don't think it matters the position. Yes, you got to address receiver, and you do that through a trade. That's probably what it would be. You know, free agents right now, there's not anybody that really blows you away. But I think there's some receivers that you could get later in the draft too. That could help. It's not as deep of a receiver draft as last year, but I still think you could find one a little later. I think Brady would look at Vrabel and Rancarthon and say, "Hey, at 11, let's just get the best player to help this team possible." That's what I would do. Let's get to point number seven.
I either re-sign Nate Davis, or if I lose Nate Davis, and I don't really know if I want to pay $18 million a year for Nate Davis, and that's probably what he's going to fetch on the open market, I may bring back Roger Saffold. Roger Saffold played for $6 million for 1 year from the Buffalo Bills last year. He's old, I get it, but again, he knows what you do. He works well with Derrick Henry, and if I'm losing Nate Davis, then I can, you know, figure something out at right guard, maybe in the draft, plug Saffold back in at left guard, and now I've got my left tackle, my left guard, my starting center in Ben Jones, and my right tackle in Petit Ferrer, and then I'll figure out right guard. I won't do what they did and plug some 270-pounder in there, but I'll figure it out at right guard.
So on that, whether you get Brady or not, I would actually look at bringing Roger Saffold back at left guard, because my guess is Aaron Brewer is going to move over to center because Ben Jones is going to retire. You get Saffold to come back on a similar deal to what he had in Buffalo, even though I've heard, I think he wants, he would be interested in re-signing with Buffalo. But, you know, if you can get him to come back, it's a different GM now. And I mean, I guess if you're saying, hey, you're going to be blocking for Brady, then who knows what that does. But he liked, I feel like he got along with Tannehill and Henry, obviously. You bring him back no matter what. You, to me, have to re-sign Nate Davis. I think that is kind of on the list of things that the Titans have to get done this offseason. Because Nate Davis, even though he didn't have a great year last year, maybe, you know, he had injuries just like everybody else, I think he's a pillar on that offensive line. And, you know, if I can avoid changing a key position, then I would do that. So I would try and do that no matter what. But I like the idea of trying to get Roger Saffold to come back here no matter what. Let's get to his final point on bringing Tom Brady to Nashville.
I keep David Long Jr. on defense, and I'm cutting Bud Dupree. The core of dudes who replaced Harold Landry last year, because remember, Landry's coming back, the core of dudes that replaced Landry last year will be kind of what I do to replace Dupree. The truth is, last year, the Titans played without both of them, Dupree and Landry. Well, I'm getting Landry back, and I feel confident that Harold Landry will be okay, because other than the torn ACL, Harold Landry has always been okay. So I get Harold Landry back. I lose Bud Dupree, who barely even played for me anyways, and the crew of Weaver and Mario Edwards and DeMarcus Walker and, you know, whatever. Those kind of guys will fill in that spot. But with Landry and Autry and Simmons, I feel pretty good about my defensive front. I need David Long Jr. in there. He's not going to cost me top dollar because he's not a top dollar player, but he is a core member of my defense to go with Autry, Simmons, Byard, Hooker, and that group.
Again, I put that in the category of something that you're going to do no matter what, and you need to do no matter what, whether it's Brady or Tannehill or somebody else at quarterback. David Long Jr. is one of those that I think you need to really, really try to bring back. I agree with him. I do think Bud Dupree, they're going to move on from. I'm interested in what Rashad Weaver can do, because I think we lose sight of the fact that last year was basically his rookie year. He was hurt the entire rookie year and had a lot going on. So I think there's still more for him. There's more development that he can do in the offseason. You know, he's going to be healthier. So I'd be fine moving on from Bud Dupree unless he's just willing to take a big pay cut and you can restructure it that way. But I'd be cool with Rashad Weaver becoming the main guy. So there you go. Those are Jared Stillman's, I guess, his selling points to bring Tom Brady to Nashville. And I didn't hate all of them. I think there's some, though, that you could apply no matter what. And there's some guys that you need to bring in or re-sign no matter what, even if it's sticking with Ryan Tannehill. So wanted to get into that. Coming up next, we'll get back into the Predators. Willie Donnett going to join us in studio. We'll break down where they're at the All-Star break. That's next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.